Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air. Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Monday. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every single day. And, of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line. And welcome to the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho these past 25-plus years. We're glad to be with you. If you want to join the best conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And as I've always said, if you disagree with my point of view, I'm happy to hear your counter-argument. That makes you a naysayer. And we love great naysayers, so dial it in, 866-439-5277. Send emails, that's an alternative, talk at LarsLarson.com. And you can answer our X poll today. I think this one's relatively easy. It'll probably come as close to 99% on the results as I can imagine. What if you knew that people who work for the IRS, arguably one of the most hated federal agencies in America, and not very well run either, what if you found out that the people who work there, staff members, owe a collective $46 million in unpaid income taxes? Well, do you think they ought to be told you either pay up the money you owe because you're working at the IRS? It certainly doesn't make sense for you to owe money, back taxes, not be paying them, and while you're out enforcing the law on American citizens. So, should IRS employees who don't pay up their delinquent taxes get a pink slip? Republican Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa has put in a bill to celebrate Tax Day in which she wants to claw back the $46 million that is owed in taxes by IRS workers. She's calling it the Audit the IRS Act, which requires the tax collecting agency to probe its workers every single year. And if you have an agent who doesn't pay his tax bills or her tax bills, then they get a pink slip. I think that's perfectly fair. In fact, it amazes me that a federal agency designed to collect taxes from American citizens would even hire somebody who owes back taxes. I'd even allow that since the IRS is relatively generous when it comes to payment plans, if you owe the IRS a few $1,000, you can say to them, hey, do you mind if I pay this off over the next 12 months, a certain amount every month? And as long as you stay squared away with the IRS, then they don't come back and seize your bank account or take your property or garnish your wages. They don't do any of that. So, I've been there myself, by the way. It was a long time ago, but there I was. So, should IRS employees get a pink slip if they don't pay up their back taxes? I'd vote yes on that. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. I saw something amazing come out of Washington, D.C. today. It happened in the Oval Office. The president of El Salvador sat down with President Donald Trump. And then a bunch of nitwit reporters, amongst them, the worst is, of course, Caitlin Collins of the Chicken Noodle News Network, CNN. And she wanted to know about Abrejo Garcia. Now, we've talked about Abrejo Garcia before. He's become like the poster child for violent gang members who've been deported from America. And if you take a look, as I did this morning, again, just to refresh my memory, Abrejo Garcia's story has been the subject of headlines like wrongfully deported man not leaving El Salvador prison or mistakenly deported. That's NBC News. The president of El Salvador says he won't return a mistakenly deported man to the United States. Now, what kind of impression does that give you of the situation? You say, wow, you mean Donald Trump and his ICE team at Customs and Border Protection, that they just took somebody who shouldn't have been deported and they sent him to El Salvador? For God's sake, what is the world come to? Except that it's not that at all. In fact, it's very easy to understand what happened. And sitting there in the room with the president of El Salvador and President Donald Trump was Attorney General Pam Bondi. Listen to this.
First and foremost,
He was illegally in our country. He had been illegally in our country. And in 2019, two courts, an immigration court and an appellate immigration court, ruled that he was a member of MS-13 and he was illegally in our country.
Now, that seems pretty straightforward. You're a member of a notoriously violent gang. You're in the United States illegally. You get your hearing in court, then you get your appeal, and it turns out, no, you need to go. That happened 6 years ago. And then he was sent off by President Trump because Joe Biden couldn't be bothered with that. He was busy letting illegal aliens into America, not getting rid of them. Joe Biden allowed more than 10 million illegals to enter the United States in just 4 years. Now we've got the border almost completely sealed. The number of people coming in, or at least being encountered at the border, is in the, say, 7,000 range for a month. It used to be 14,000 a day during Joe Biden, just to give you a comparison. But let me get back to Abrejo Garcia. Because Stephen Miller, who's one of the assistants to Donald Trump, was also standing in the Oval Office for that meeting today with the president of El Salvador. And what did he have to say? He said, you can't bring this guy back. Number one, he's a gang member. Number two, he's violent. Number three, he's already been ordered deported. But you'd literally have to kidnap him because he's back in his home country.
And a district court judge tried to tell the administration that they had to kidnap a citizen of El Salvador and fly him back here. That issue was raised to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said the district court order was unlawful, and its main components were reversed 9-0 unanimously, stating clearly that neither Secretary of State nor the President could be compelled by anybody to forcibly retrieve a citizen of El Salvador from El Salvador, who again is a member of MS-13, which, as I'm sure you understand, rapes little girls, murders women, murders children, is engaged in the most barbaric activities in the world. And I can promise you, if he was your neighbor, you would move right away.
Yeah, you'd probably move right away. And in fact, to cap all of that off, after all the court action that Abrejo Garcia, the guy that all the mainstream media is saying, well, they accidentally sent him back to El Salvador. They sent him to his home country. He was ordered deported 6 years ago. And even the U.S. Supreme Court, with all those liberals on it, voted 9-0. You can't tell the president or the attorney general or the secretary of state to take this guy back. But then the question came from Caitlin Collins, this nitwit from CNN, who asked, well, aren't you just going to return him to the U.S.? Listen to what the president of El Salvador said in reply.
Do you plan to return him?
Well, I'm supposed to not suggesting that I smuggle a terrorist into the United States, right? How can I return him to the United States? Like, could I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it. It's like, the question is preposterous. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
So in other words, the president of El Salvador says I can't do it. The U.S. Supreme Court says the president of the United States doesn't have to do it. The guy was ordered deported. And Stephen Miller made one other point. He said, based on the court ruling so far, Abrejo Garcia doesn't even have the right to set foot on American soil, which means if the president of El Salvador kidnapped him, put him on a plane, sent him to America, Customs and Border Protection at the airport would immediately turn him around, put him back on the plane, and send him right back to his home country of El Salvador. And yet, the mainstream media says he was mistakenly deported. Oh, and he told a federal immigration judge, I fear persecution. I don't know. Everything I've heard about MS-13, I don't think those guys have to fear anything. Everybody else has to fear them. Welcome to a Monday. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. As we move in,
simply by listening, you're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Hey, I've got a question for you. Do you trust your doctor and America's messed up medical industry? It turns out that politics may be a good predictor of your answer. University of Oregon politics professor Neil O'Brien, by the way, I did put emails into Professor O'Brien, no response back yet, but he did surveys that started during the pandemic years, and his results show that a lot of us who vote conservative have lost trust in medicine. Frankly, the medical industrial complex has actually grown hostile toward conservatives, and it's supposed to serve in the United States, even though these days it seems though we're serving the medical industrial complex instead. How many of you, like me, have heard a doctor ask whether or not you took the COVID jab? And remember, that's the shot that we were promised prevented COVID, and it didn't. Promised that it would prevent you from going to the hospital with COVID, and it didn't. Promised that it would keep you from dying of COVID, and it didn't. Even Joe Biden made those claims. Nurses and doctors got fired by hospitals and clinics for refusing to take the jab. And then the hospitals turned around and whined about how they were short of staff after they fired literally thousands of people here in the Pacific Northwest. How about the ridicule that's heaped on any patient who has the temerity to ask about ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine? Has anybody else noticed the emergency rooms packed with illegal aliens who get treatment they're not even paying for while you sit there and wait for the treatment you did pay for? How about going to hospitals that still castrate and sterilize teenage boys and girls? Not exactly the kind of stuff that inspires trust in the system, and your politics likely informs your position on all of those issues. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery, and get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Here's the question. Are Northwest hospitals finding ways to work around Donald Trump cutting off funding for sterilizing and castrating teenage kids? I got this anonymous tip. And by the way, I'm glad to get anonymous tips and I'm glad to keep them anonymous. But listen to this carefully about one Oregon county. Painfully sad news tip for you. First, I wish to remain anonymous, but I was on a call last Friday with staffers from Clackamas County's Department of Human Services that works with the State Department of Human Services. They wanted to assure us that despite the federal funding being cut off for so-called gender-affirming care, that they have found an insurance company that will still cover affirming surgeries and that they are going to expedite the process to get them done before the funding dries up. They did not disclose the name of the insurance provider. Well, guess what? I've reached out to some of the elected officials in Clackamas County, and I said, what's going on here? I mean, do you have a county agency that is working in concert, I would say conspiring with a state agency to do surgery using monies that the public is providing, or they found an insurance company that for some strange reason is willing to cover these surgeries? Maybe they're trying to gin up more business with Clackamas County. And why are you doing this kind of thing? When I reached out to some of the elected officials, they said, first of all, they were surprised to hear the county and the County Department of Human Services was involved at all. And do you think I've got every right to expect that if one county is doing it, probably all of the counties are doing it, at least in the counties that are mostly blue and Democrat dominated? And what are they doing to these kids? And why are they doing it when the president has ordered an executive order that cuts off the funding for this mutilation of children? I'm asking all those questions. I'm glad to get more tips. And some of those elected officials are looking into the question for me. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door. Don't
stop. Well, I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to the state of Oregon, and as I predicted, they're finding more illegal voters in the voter rolls. Now, guess what happened? Last summer, DMV discovered that it had accidentally signed up more than 1,600 illegal voters. And the Secretary of State's office was similarly shocked, I tell you, to find that they had signed up illegal voters. Well, as the Daily Fish Wrapper points out, less than 2 months after Governor Tina Kotek told the Oregon Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division, the new name for DMV, that it could resume automatic voter registration, the agency has discovered it has another 118 non-citizens who are placed on the voter rolls. Of those, one of them, the 118 that were newly discovered, at least 13 appear to have voted. Now, why is this a concern? I told you when I got that interview with Tobias Reed, the Secretary of State, the only elected Democrat in the Pacific Northwest at a statewide level from Oregon or Washington willing to come on this program in the last 30 years. But I said to him, you checked 1.7 million voter records to see if you could find illegal voters. He said, that's right. I said, but there are 3.4 million voters in the state of Oregon. Why didn't you check the other 1.7 million? He said, we'll do those as we go along. Meaning that as people renew their driver's licenses, which can happen up to 8 years from now, that they're going to check and see if their citizens are on. In the meantime, they stay on. But as the Fish Wrapper reports, Oregon DMV confessed on Friday it mistakenly allowed 118 people who are almost certainly non-citizens to register to vote, bringing the total number of errant registrations discovered in the last year to more than 1,700. They point out, because the Fish Wrapper is like this, only one of those errors occurred since DMV implemented its new guardrails. Wouldn't that suggest a failure? You put up guardrails and say, yeah, but we still are accidentally registering people to vote. Fact is, they don't know how many foreign nationals are on the voter rolls in Oregon. I don't think Washington State is even looking. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com, is brought to you by Mod Pods, a better alternative to tiny homes. They're customized living solutions in your own backyard without the customized cost. Online, find them at getmodpod.com. Now, Paul Smith writes, and Lars, I got a copy of an email sent to Vancouver Public School employees that they are recruiting teachers for a cadre to revise and transform the curriculum of social studies from K-12. This really means changing how history is taught, what's taught, how it's presented. There's nothing more than telling kids what they want them to hear. The white man is bad, and there are things that were done to natives and blacks and all the other liberal indoctrination that they want to spew at the kids. This is alarming, and I'm sure this cadre will only be liberal teachers who want to do it. It will not include parents, the public, or the media like it should. I can't email you a copy, so how do I get it to you? I live in Vancouver, and I really want this exposed for what it is. Well, Paul, I appreciate that tip like I appreciate all of the tips. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I'm glad to get your calls. Coming up in just a moment, does Washington's new tax-heavy budget include big payoffs for some of Climate Jay Inslee's buddies? We're going to talk about that up next. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show. Just think of him as your concealed carry. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. You might wonder this. You think, wow, we're finally safe from the predations of Governor Jay Inslee. He's gone, and Rob Ferguson came in. Yeah, he's not much better, but he has shown some signs that maybe he's going to go a different direction than Inslee used to. But now it turns out that maybe this big, fat budget that they want to pass, Democrats want to pass in Olympia, is full of a bunch of goodies for some of Jay Inslee's buddies. Todd Myers joins me now, Vice President for Research at the Washington Policy Center. Hey, Todd, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, happy Monday. Nice to chat with you.
Nice to talk to you as well. Tell me what some of the goodies are that are going to Jay Inslee's friends.
Well, I was going through the budget because, you know, of course, Washington State has a CO2 tax. And so they have a specific fund for the revenue from that CO2 tax. And I wanted to see how they were spending it. And so I noticed that in the proposed House budget that there were three expenditures, all to promote offshore floating wind turbines off the coast of Washington. Now, wind turbines are, floating wind turbines in particular, are very expensive. Offshore wind is rated as one of, if not the most expensive form of energy generation. And so I thought that was sort of interesting. And there are three expenditures of $2 million. But the one that stood out at me was one that was very specific, that said it had to be a Seattle non-regulatory, non-profit organization that promoted Washington's partnership with other West Coast states to promote floating wind turbines. And I was like, oh, they clearly have somebody in mind that they're writing this for. So I just simply Googled that, and I found a group in Seattle whose description on their webpage was virtually identical to the language in the law, that happened to be headed by Jay Inslee's former maritime advisor.
Is that the one called Maritime Blue?
It is. And so the is $500,000 that goes specifically to Maritime Blue. And as I said, the founder and the head of it is Jay Inslee's former maritime advisor. Now, I don't think that he's putting it in a Swiss bank account. I think he actually probably believes in this, but you know, he has friends in the legislature, and he knows how to steer money to his organization in particular, and that's what he's doing. And that's too much of this CO2 money. That's what we see, is it goes to political allies, not to actually helping the planet.
Todd, I know this gets a little bit into the law, and I'm not a lawyer, and I can't remember. I don't think you're a lawyer either. But isn't there something in the Constitution that forbids a bill of attainder? Now, I don't know if it only deals with criminal matters where you say, we're going to write a law against something, and you say, wow, you just made whatever it was Lars did and nobody else in America illegal. That's called a bill of attainder. And the founders of the country didn't like the idea that Congress or legislatures would write laws or write bills that only aimed at one person, either positively or negatively, did they?
So in Washington State, it is illegal to do what is called a gift of public money. You can't say, we're going to send $10,000 to Lars. You have to say, we're going to send, here's a grant of $10,000 to a radio talk show host who lives in southern Washington, whose name has Scandinavian origin. So that's how they do it, and that's why this language is written in such a way that, and so when I saw it, I was like, I know what's going on here. They're trying to get around the prohibition against gifts of public money by describing essentially some something that only describes one organization.
Well, and by the way, one other detail to this: when you say he's getting $500,000, you say, well, that's for wind turbines. No, it's to promote wind turbines. So it's going to provide some portion. I don't know whether it's 99% or 2% of this guy's budget at Maritime Blue. But it sounds like that money is going to somebody who says, I've promised I'll go out and talk up the idea of wind turbines. That's what it is. It doesn't actually buy anything, does it?
That's correct. So none of the, there are three separate line items that add up to $2 million for floating wind turbines. None of those actually do generate any electricity. All of them are for studies and plans and communications and outreach and those sorts of things. So, yes, it is just more bureaucracy, money that doesn't actually help the planet.
Well, why don't you take that bill you just wrote verbally on the air and say, we're going to give $10,000 to Lars Larson. It could be a larger sum if necessary. And I'll promise to promote, I don't know, low taxes, Second Amendment, gun issues, you know, pick your subject. I'll promote all of them. Just send me the check. This is so sleazy. Is anybody in the legislature identifying this as just being a gift to Jay Inslee's buddies?
So we highlighted it. We got some very nice coverage on it. And in fact, it's interesting because I started getting phone calls from people saying, hey, you know, here's some other things. And then I got a call from the Ho tribe, which is out on the coast, and they're worried about these wind turbines off of their reservation land. So there are people who are working to try to kill this, but obviously the fact that we are raising billions in taxes while still, you know, wasting millions of dollars for political allies. It just shows how out of touch they are with the real financial situation that we have in Washington State. And they're still sort of addicted to giving money to political allies.
Well, speaking of the concerns of the Ho tribe, remember what happened off Nantucket last year? They built a bunch of brand spanking new, newly engineered, new materials wind turbines, put them out there, and then one of them, within a couple of months, with no major storms or anything else, simply exploded and came apart, and the carbon fiber wreckage from these windmill turbines turned up on six big public beaches. I can understand why the tribes would be concerned. Is anybody else out there evidencing a concern about the fact that wind turbine technology not only is expensive, But it can sometimes just simply self-destruct for no good reason, which suggests that maybe it's not ready for prime time anyway.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, I think some people have raised those concerns, and I believe that I looked at it. I think the executive order that the president signed banning offshore wind, I think, applies to Washington's coast. But obviously, the legislature is ignoring all of that and putting money in because, again, it goes to state agencies and political allies. That is the priority.
Any sign that they're going to go back and clean this up now that it's had some public exposure, starting with you and then the coverage that your reporting on it got to?
Let's hope so. They're currently in conference committee between the House and Senate to come up with the final budget. So we won't know whether we have removed it or not. But let's hope so.
Well, I got to tell you something. This stuff just frustrates the daylights out of me. Todd, thanks very much for what you do at the Washington Policy Center.
Yep, nice to chat with you.
Nice talking to you as well. That's Todd Myers. Anybody think that's a great idea? Because frankly, I think even if you got rid of all these NGOs, there are plenty of private organizations out there who really like the idea of wind turbines. And in fact, the companies that actually make the wind turbines, if you want somebody to promote a product, say you want to promote Ford automobiles, you say, great, Ford Motor Company can do that. If you want to promote some other product, if you want to promote people wearing tennis shoes, I bet Nike and Avia and Reeboks can probably do a bang-up job, and they can do it with their own money instead of taking money from the legislature. Should any legislature, Oregon, Washington, or Idaho, be out taking public money saying, this money is being used to promote an idea? How about don't promote the idea at all? If it has public support and there are private entities, either nonprofits or citizen groups that want to promote the idea, then let them do it with their own dollars. In this case, a state that claims to be functionally broke. In other words, they're short by billions of dollars in their budget, and yet they can still find millions of dollars for nonsense like this. That makes absolutely no sense to me. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up in a moment, that parent bill of rights that the voters approved, well, it's getting a bit gutted by your so-called representatives in Olympia. We'll get to that in just a moment. We'll also get to your phone calls and emails. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Oh, we've
always for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
Saying the things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. Oregon has now declared it would rather cheat your kids and cancel federal funds than give up on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This DEI nonsense is nothing other than institutionalized discrimination. It simply says we're going to choose kids based on their skin color, based on their sexuality, instead of simply choosing them based on merit. Well, the top officials in Oregon, according to the Fish Wrapper, are now refusing to sign off on a demand from the U.S. Department of Education that requires states to abandon DEI policies if they want to still get federal funding. So they sent out a four-page letter from the Federal Department of Ed saying the continued use of illegal DEI practices may subject the individual or entity, that means the agency getting the money, Earlier this week, Washington State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl, who's not exactly the sharpest tool in your shed, he said he pushed back against that letter as well. So both Oregon and Washington are saying we'd rather refuse the federal funds and deny your kids the benefit of those the funding than have to give up DEI. They are tying themselves to ideology instead of simply saying, let's do what's best for the kids. And the fact is, all of these folks from the education industry, because it really is an industry, it generates dollars. It doesn't necessarily educate kids, but it certainly generates cash. What they're saying is our ties to ideology are stronger than our obligation to educate your kids. It makes no sense. And Governor Kotek, for Oregon's side of this, said the Trump administration's threat to shortchange Oregon students hurts children and families and undermines the dedication and work of our educators. We will not tolerate this unwarranted and unlawful attempt to take away resources promised to Oregon students and paid for by tax dollars we send to the government. Good. Then, Governor Kotek, why don't you tell your education department, number one, give up DEI. And does that hurt the kids? It does not. It simply says to every kid, you will be judged based on your merit. We're not making special exceptions based on your skin color, based on your sexuality, based on what kind of gender or pronoun you identify with. If you can tell me how DEI benefits the kids, then maybe it's justified. But I don't think that's true at all. To your calls now. Let's start with Gordon and Everett. Hey, Gordon, thanks for listening on KVI and the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
On Friday, you started to talk, you had so many guests from Stanford, but what's on my mind is these free eternal hot, high-pressure showers for life, and you don't seem to, and you didn't
free
show any
eternal? Where did free or eternal come in? Gordon, what Donald Trump has said is it's crazy that the federal government for the last 30-plus years has limited shower flows to 2.5 gallons. Why isn't it my choice if I want to take a hot shower that has a powerful stream of water and I do it for 5 minutes, that somehow that's evil if I do it at 4 gallons a minute? But if I do 2.5 gallons a minute, I can take a 30-minute shower and use more water, and that somehow we're benefited by having, you know, the government dictate what kind of shower head you can have? Tell me how that works.
It's working so far, and people who don't, that's Lars' view of showers. People who have never showered or new to showering, they don't know.
New to showering? What does that mean?
It means like maybe people knew their kids are come to the country and you provide all these high pressure showers like indiscriminately, and you can just
indiscriminately. You know. Gordon, do you decide when you take a shower? Do you decide how long that shower will be? You say, probably take me 10 minutes. You just go in and stay until somebody drags you out of the shower, because it's not indiscriminate. It's a But Gordon, why do you think it's the government's business how much of a stream of water you're entitled to as an American to take a shower?
The mentality of public responsibility instead of recent points of view that you take, that there's no sense of spread out responsibility.
No, personal responsibility is important, but Gordon, this is the government saying you're not allowed to take a powerful shower. You can go in and draw a bathtub full with 60 or 80 gallons in a big bathtub, but you can't take 20 gallons and take it all at 4 gallons per minute. That doesn't make any sense, but interesting call. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Scott in Issaquah. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I was thinking about this idea that Inslee has of these floating windmills or whatever. I mean, it's just the idea is loony, and the idea you got some mill floating around sea. What about the birds that all land on it? Kill all the birds, you know, they're gonna think it's some kind of island.
Windmills on land kill a tremendous number of birds. I can imagine on the ocean they may be able to even kill more.
Right. And then what about ships? You know, ships could run into it, and it'd be a total danger, hazard at sea. And I mean, how much is it gonna cost to run the power lines after? A dam probably produces power 20 times, 30 times cheaper.
Yep.
Than that. So I don't,
and by the way, Scott, you don't have to be a metallurgist to think what happens when you take moving parts machine as big and powerful as a floating windmill and then expose it to seawater, salty, corrosive water, 24/7. What do you think happens to that?
It lubricates the parts and they last longer.
You sound like you should be working for a windmill company. That's crazy. I mean, anybody who knows anything about the water knows that if you take metal and you and again, the windmills have carbon fiber blades, but the rest of those moving parts, they're all made out of metal. Dip them in salt water, it's not exactly good for it. Back in a moment. It's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
And seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and we serve the needs of the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. And one of our regular resources is the former district attorney, Josh Marquis, now a member of the board for the Oregon Criminal Justice Truth Project. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Lars.
You know, there aren't many days where I get surprised by a little tidbit of information about somebody's background, but I was surprised by this one, and I'm kind of springing this one on you. You know who Ellen Rosenblum is and the position she held for, what, a decade or more?
Over a decade. She was over the state attorney general. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know who her daddy is or what?
No.
The founder of Americans United for Life.
You mean a pro-life group?
Oh, the pro-life group. The one that's been around for half a century, one of the biggest ones in America, was founded by Victor Rosenblum, who was at Northwestern University Law School for a long time, and then he came to Oregon and he headed up Reed College, notoriously liberal, but maybe not back in 1968. But I wondered how that was a tidbit, because I've asked a couple of reporter friends of mine, did you know this about her background? I mean, it's kind of stunning to me because, few people were more vociferously pro-abortion. I mean, to the point of, we'll fly ladies into Oregon to get them abortions at state expense. She was
right.
That pro-abortion. And here's the attorney general whose dad founded one of the biggest, pro-life groups in America, if not the biggest.
That is absolutely fascinating. And I've known Ellen not well, but certainly, for at least 30 years, and I had absolutely no idea. Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate because she weaponized the attorney general's office in a way to, I happen to be pro-choice, but I also think it's kind of nutty for Oregonians to be paying for non-citizens to be flown to the state. It's politicizing in a way I don't think it needs to be. And Democrats in Oregon just seem intent on sort of burning down the House. And although they are temporarily in charge and have been for a while of the state House and the AG's office and everything else, that will not last forever. And
you're sure of that, even with cheating and vote by mail? Because it is, so far they got 40 years on their side.
It's been revealed that there are now, at least by their admission, a couple thousand people who shouldn't have voted at all. In other words, weren't even American citizens who have voted. And then if you take that number, probably it's realistic to add a zero on to the end of it in terms of how many. And, that is about something that supposedly the Democratic Party, which I have been a part of or was a part of for many, many years, they like to call election integrity, meaning that if you can't trust the source of it, then and I do generally. I mean, I just assume people are making bad choices. But let's talk about some bad choices being made on our
Talk about that. Multnomah County wants to hold hostage the district attorney's budget. So city of Portland, which is surrounded by Multnomah County, about 800,000 people live in the county, biggest county in Oregon, one of the biggest counties in the Northwest. And they've now, after watching 4 years of Schmidt for brains, the guy who's the former DA, actually lay waste to any kind of prosecution of serious crimes. And a replacement comes in, and the first thing they do is say, we want to cut your budget.
Right. What's really now, in fairness, they also have to say, oh, well, we're just limiting it to 3%, just like everybody else. And I've been in that place more than once. Because I ran a budget for 25 years. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, DA's offices often aren't the most popular place to send money. But if you ask voters where they want their tax dollars to go, the two most likely answers everywhere in Oregon and most states are the sheriff's office and the district attorney's office. And one of the things that's sort of a trick about what's been going on is Schmidt for Brains grotesquely downsized the real efforts of the DA's office. They were filing fewer cases than Washington County, which has a population, I think, of about half of Multnomah County. So basically what was happening in Multnomah County was they just weren't filing hundreds or more of cases. So basically,
and by the way, let me translate that for my audience. That means they weren't indicting and prosecuting as many right. people as even a much smaller county.
Right. And if it's like, you know, the proverbial tree that falls in the forest. If the DA does not file the charge, it doesn't exist. It doesn't matter whether a police made an arrest, because without a filing, the case does not continue. And you can look at the stats. You don't have to, you know, have any kind of a degree to look at them. And you can see that one of two things happened in Portland in the last 3 or 4 years. Either crime took an enormous decrease, which we know objectively it simply did not happen, or filings were dramatically reduced on all levels, from quality of life crimes like shoplifting, vandalism, all the way up through really serious Measure 11 crimes. And so, fortunately, I think the new district attorney, Nathan Vasquez, has real... he was elected by a very, very clear majority. But the Multnomah County Commission is a particularly bad bunch of actors. And they do, speaking from experience, they do have the ability to choke off his budget. And the way it works in Oregon is all the DA is a state officer. Each DA relies on the county to provide adequate money to be able to run their office.
By the way, before we run out of time, I want you to speak to this idea, and I've mentioned it already. Oregon's Department of Education and the governor have said, we don't care. We'll give up the federal money before we give up DEI. What should people make of that?
Well, one of two things. Either the money is absolutely really not needed at all, which I suspect is largely true. And I come from a family of educators. My father was a college professor. My mother was a teacher. Education is super, super important. But on the other hand, the federal government's role in education is really should be de minimis. I mean, people pay in Oregon substantial property taxes on a local basis. They elect local school boards. And it's very interesting that the state would take this, you know, we're standing by here. The only thing I can gather from that is they really don't need that money at all, or they're going to find some way to basically recycle it in through the back door to feed the monsters.
Question to a guy who's from a family of educators. Can you imagine any benefit to children to saying to them, we're not going to judge based on merit or academics or scholarship. We're going to judge based on skin color and sexuality and where you came from?
I think you're condemning that child to a second-class life, and that's what Martin Luther King aspired not, you know, that we would be judged not by the color of our skin, but the content of our character. And I know that liberals don't like conservatives appropriating that very important speech by Martin Luther King, but that is the essence of what, DEI is all about.
Well, when you consider that MLK was a gun-toting pro-family Christian, and pro-life at that, he wasn't. I know the Democrats like to identify with MLK. There ain't much there. There's not much comparison. That is Josh Marquis, the former DA, now on the Criminal Justice Truth Project. Back in a moment. Did Joe Biden's flood of illegals wash up a bunch of child sexual predators too? When it comes...
savvy, informed, and always guessing what he'll say next. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to ask you a question that's not entirely rhetorical. Did Joe Biden's flood of illegal aliens also wash up a whole crop of child sexual predators on the shores of the United States of America? I'm going to give you one specific example, and then I'll talk about some of the other craziness that went with it, along with assigning Social Security numbers to illegal aliens so they could cash in on the social welfare benefits that are available in most of America. Glad to have you with me. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you happen to be a naysayer, well, naysayers go right to the head of the line. Always have, always will. And we're proud of that. The only thing I'd ask you is if you call in as a naysayer, make it clear to the producer what is the point you want to make that contrasts with, say, something you disagree with that I said. And then get on the air with me, make your point, back it up with facts and logic and the law and anything else you want to throw in there, and then stick around for a couple of questions. You can find the X poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. So last week, I told you about this hugely tragic story from the West Coast. It was out of California. A 13-year-old boy, his soccer coach kidnapped him and allegedly, the guy still has a right to his day in court, sexually abused and then murdered this child. And I suspected at the time, and I said so, that I guessed that the soccer coach was probably an illegal alien. Well, now we've managed to confirm it. ICE has lodged a detainer, which means they put a hold on this guy, Mario Eduardo Garcia Aquino. He is a 43-year-old. He is from El Salvador. He is living in the United States unlawfully, according to ICE, and the agency confirms that Garcia Aquino is accused of killing 13-year-old Omar Hernandez from the San Fernando Valley. So, how in the world did he end up as a soccer coach? Well, think about this. Los Angeles and the whole state of California, along with the states of Oregon and Washington, are considered sanctuaries for illegal aliens. So, what happens? That means that law enforcement refuses to cooperate with immigration and customs enforcement. Now, all of this is in line with the stories in which they say he's accused of killing the child and that the person who's accused is a soccer coach. And if you read far enough down in the story, you might find out that perhaps he's a foreign national. But what you will not see is the term illegal alien. And why is that? Because the mainstream media has gone along with this whole joke, and it is a joke in the United States, that we have a country where we have the laws and we try to protect children best we can. And then you have somebody who comes in illegally under Joe Biden. He ends up living here for a period of time illegally. And people say, well, what's the harm? I mean, you even hear dimwit Democrats like Jasmine Crockett, member of Congress from Texas, who says, We're not going to pick cotton anymore. We have to have these illegal aliens. Why? They do all the scut work that Americans won't do. Well, you and I both know that's not true. There are lots and lots of illegal aliens who work in high-paying jobs in construction, high-paying jobs driving a truck, all kinds of activities that pay very, very well. And the illegal aliens have those jobs, and the jobs really ought to belong to American citizens. But when it comes to something like a job of soccer coach, and you're going to be allowed to mix with young children, like 13-year-old Omar Hernandez. There's another child, and apparently Mr. Garcia Aquino is also suspected of sexually abusing him. And yet, what does the mainstream media do? First, the officials covered up to the greatest extent possible. They say he's a man from California, or he's a man from the San Fernando Valley, or he's a man who's a soccer coach. You get all of these descriptions of the person, except the one that is most significant, and that was he was allowed to come into the country illegally, and Joe Biden let it happen. Second, the Doge crew, and I know there are plenty of people who have questions about what Elon Musk and his crew of Department of Government Efficiency people are doing, but what have they just found out? Here's the report. The Biden administration not only released a record number of KSTs into the United States. And what is a KST? A known or suspected terrorist. They took people that they knew were either terrorists already, or they were suspected of being terrorists, and they released them into the United States. And not only that, gave them social security numbers and taxpayer-funded welfare. Now, Department of Government Efficiency has come up with that result. They posted their latest findings about alleged government waste, fraud, and abuse. And so, look, I've had questions, too, about what they are doing and how they are doing it. And you've heard those on the left say, why, these people are trying to steal your Social Security check. No, they're actually identifying people who've been given the right to collect benefits that all come out of the same pot of money that your Social Security check, your Medicare, your Medicaid, your food stamps, your TANF, your welfare, your Section 8 housing, it all comes out of the same pot of money. And here's the official report from DOGE. Under the Biden administration, it was routine for the Border Patrol to admit aliens into the United States with no legal status and minimal screening. 14 million border crossers reported under Joe Biden, including 2 million who managed to evade detection altogether. They were the gotaways, or the ones that were never seen as they came across the border. Customs and Border Protection knew they were coming in, but did not see them, because they were sneaked in by Mexican drug cartels that have made gigantic billion-dollar profits by sneaking people in and trafficking in human beings. And millions, literally millions, of illegal aliens flew into America on flights. You say, where'd they get the money for the flights? They got it from you and me. American taxpayers paid for those flights through so-called parole programs created by Joe Biden. Judges have now ruled that those programs were illegal, because some of the states, not the blue states, but all the rest of the states, the conservative and sensible states, said, you can't do this. You can't take American taxpayer money, hire a charter flight, and then fly people into the United States. You simply can't do it. 1 million from Venezuela, including members of Tren de Aragua, the violent terrorist organization, they've gone out into all of these different states, and they were given little or no screening at all. Now, what did Customs and Border Protection show? They released inadmissible illegal foreign nationals into the United States instead of saying, you've got to take these out. And among them, this is the most interesting group, 6,300 individuals paroled into the United States on the FBI's terrorist screening watch list, or those with criminal records. In other words, if they had wanted to come into the country legally, they would have been asked, well, what's your background? And then they'd do a background check and they'd say, I'm sorry, you're a convicted criminal. We're not going to let you in. Or you're on the terrorist watch list. We are not going to let you in. Now, that's what's called the terrorist screening data set, which is the federal government's database that contains sensitive information about terrorist identities. Well, they have a watch list. And what they do is they watch for these individuals because they know they're dangerous. Over the last 10 years, they have evolved that list to include additional individuals who represent a potential threat to the United States, including known affiliates of watch-listed individuals. Joe Biden let them in, and at least some of them are now suspected of killing American adults, American children. This is the kind of thing that we got from an uncontrolled border, and Donald Trump is doing everything he can to reverse that, and to a large extent, he's got most of it reversed in less than 90 days. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to take your calls. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. If we keep meeting like this, people are going to talk. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Did top IRS officials use the tax agency's tax-exempt status as a political tool? Seems like a reasonable question for me. I'll get to your phone calls and emails in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And join me in welcoming Tom Jones, who is president of the American Accountability Foundation. Mr. Jones, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Tell me what's going on involving the IRS official who, as you say, played a major role in an Obama-era scandal at the IRS, being promoted by the Biden administration and now runs a big division of the IRS?
Exactly. And, you know, a lot of your listeners will probably remember the kind of the Tea Party scandal in the kind of late aughts, early teens, where there were officials at the exempt organizations division at the IRS targeting conservative and Tea Party groups for increased scrutiny and eventually, you know, denying them access to nonprofit status. And everybody, I think, has heard the name Lois Lerner. She that office. Yeah, she was the ringleader on really cutting off the lifeline of nonprofit funding because, you know, my group's a nonprofit. If we don't have our C3 status, like a lot of people just won't donate to us because we won't be able to give them a tax deduction like every other nonprofit. So, you know, the scandal happened. There were congressional investigations, hearings, settlements, all kinds of things. We thought we actually won the fight. We exposed it. We thought we changed the organization. Well, what happened is the number two person, her name's Holly Paz, we thought she got fired. Or you read the stories about it. She was gone. She was pushed out. We thought she had gone away. What happened, we started investigating the IRS about a month and a half ago. Well, it turns out for the last 10 years, she's been sitting there quietly under the radar, getting promoted up the ranks of the IRS. And eventually, Biden's IRS put her in charge of something called the Large Business and International Division. And it's a little bit of a bit misnomer because what it has the ability to do is regulate what are called pass-through organizations. And those are tax companies that pass their profits through to their owners. And that's
okay. So hold on, Tom, just so everybody understands, say you run a small business, not a large organization, but say you run a mom and pop shop or you run a couple of fast food joints. And you say, well, those little companies pay taxes. You say, no, the income gets passed through to the owners, oftentimes a couple, maybe a husband and wife or a couple of business partners, and then they pay taxes on it at the individual rate. So they're paying paying the taxes of the business, but they're paying them as income to the owners. Do I have a proper understanding of that?
That's exactly right. You file something called a K-1, and it passes through onto your individual income tax. Well, Holly Paz now has the ability to investigate those pass-through entities, your LLCs, your LLPs, those type of things. And that's an incredibly powerful tool. And what we've seen the division that she runs start doing is really aggressively targeting wealthy Americans. And we don't think this is an accident. We think what they're doing is targeting wealthy conservative Americans because what they want to do is really make them comply with the audit so that they can pull those compliance costs out of the conservative ecosystem. For every $1 million that a taxpayer has to spend on complying with an IRS audit, that's $1 million that they can't give the conservative candidates. It's money that they can't give the conservative nonprofits. And really now she has the ability to target the wealthiest donors in America in a way that she didn't have before. And what we saw, I mean, look, this person, she was investigated, sanctioned. We know that she was the number two in Lois Lerner's office. She should have been fired. Unfortunately, she was promoted and put in charge of a really serious division within the IRS.
Well, is there any way to tell why she wasn't fired for those kinds of offenses? You know, when she was investigated, when she was targeted as, you've been doing these things, and I remember when this happened. I've never run an NGO. I've donated to NGOs, non-governmental organizations. But if you're a charity and you say we need the charitable, clearance, 501c3, and I've had people who know less about the tax code say, well, why do you have to have that? And I said, well, because if I went out and raised money for a small entity, like a $50,000 a year charity, which would be nothing, you know, it'd be administrative costs. You say, if you raise that money, the IRS is going to look at you and say, you've received $50,000. And I said, no, but I used it for this nonprofit activity. And they'd say, well, then you have to have 501c3 or 501c4, whatever one it happens to be. I don't know that much about the code. But if you don't have that status, it gets treated as your personal income. So imagine a veteran who runs a veterans charity and wants to raise $100,000 a year and go out and do good things with it. He or she needs that status. And they held some of those organizations up literally for 2 years heading up to, I think, the 2012 election, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly right. Like, you don't want to be raising this money personally, and you want to be able to, again, you know, give to your donors, say, look, this is just like any other charitable contribution. You can deduct it from your taxes. And if you don't have that C3 status or if they revoke it because of political reasons, your donor's going to be on the hook for paying taxes on the money that they donate here. So it's incredibly important. I think what happened is the folks at the IRS and the civil servant there said, look, we need to kind of go underground. We need to be quiet for a while. We're going to protect our own here. Because that's really kind of the dirty little secret, is that there is a permanent infrastructure within Washington of the deep state civil servants that take care of their own and are really overwhelmingly liberal. And I think they said, look, put your head down, Holly, and then once things settle down, we're gonna start pushing up the ranks. And then when the Biden administration got in there, they saw this opportunity. They promoted her to the head of this division and really – you know, coupled that with the massive number of new agents and the huge increase in funding, so that they could just kind of turn her and a lot of her allies loose on American taxpayers and American innovators. And it's really it's been disastrous, and it's really problematic. The only upside is the Trump administration, I think, is really serious about cleaning this out, and I think we're going to see even more of it in the next couple of weeks with them really changing the face of the civil service within the IRS.
I'm talking to Tom Jones, who's president of the American Accountability Foundation. So is it possible to fire somebody like Holly Paz, or maybe assign her to the IRS office in Nome, Alaska, or something like that?
Yeah, and I think that's what you've seen DOGE doing over the last few months. I think you're going to see a lot more of it once we get on the other side of tax day this week. Yeah, I think it's 100% possible to do that. You know, fortunately, look, some of these people have been self-deporting over the last week and a half when IRS partnered with ICE. They just said, hey, we don't want to be a part of this, so we're quitting. And that's great. I mean, it's obviously a lot easier if these folks quit than if you have to fire them. But, yeah, relocate her to Bear, Alaska. But most importantly, get her out of a position where she can abuse that position to punish people that she disagrees with.
Well, and imagine this, Tom, because my little company has never been audited much, but I mean, sometimes they're really wasting taxpayer dollars. I remember workers' comp. I got an audit on workers' comp. I said, I have three employees. I pay $900 a year because most of the time, the only thing you're going to get in a radio studio is a paper cut. And I said, are you really going to audit this? They said, yeah, we have to. And they came up in person and audited me. And I said, I'll show you all the paperwork. Go ahead. Have a field day. But it cost me time and money. It costs the agency time and money. It's a great way to waste public resources without doing much good. Can you imagine if everybody with a pass-through is suddenly told you or your accountant and your lawyer, you're going to have to spend a bunch of hours with us to satisfy all this? It's the process becomes the punishment, and you punish all these small business owners. Well, it probably makes them more conservative at that point, if anything, but it's a terrible thing to do. That's Tom Jones from the American Accountability Foundation. We'll get back in just a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, a new law on public display of flags in Idaho, and it's violated by Boise City. If you have bone.
He's the best investment in talk radio, and it's free. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network serving the Pacific Northwest states. That's Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. And I want to say a couple of words about Idaho, because Idaho did something that I think was entirely sensible. What they did was they said, you have to display the American flag and the state of Idaho flag. You can even display the city of Idaho flag, city of Boise flag in this case, I should have said. But you can't fly all these other political flags. And I think most of us would think of that as a fairly common sense restriction, to say that if you have a government agency, either a city, a county, a state agency, they are, of course, allowed and probably even encouraged to fly the American flag. And then they'd be encouraged to fly the state flag as well. And if you're in a particular county or city, you could fly that flag as well. But leave all the other political flags, those I might agree with and those I might disagree with, the rainbow flags and that sort of thing. You might think they're perfectly worthy, but that's not the point. The point is that City Hall, the County Commission, the state of Idaho, or the state of any other state, although Oregon and Washington don't have this law, those are perfectly legitimate messages for your political cause, but we're not going to have them fly at City Hall because it doesn't represent everybody in that city. So, guess who are the first offenders in violating this law? Well, Boise Dev, which is a news organization, reported out of Boise. The city of Boise is continuing to fly the Progress Pride flag outside of Boise City Hall. It has five horizontal stripes in rainbow colors, as well as a chevron that features colors associated with representation for the trans community and black and brown stripes for people of color. So apparently it's the whole DEI package all in one flag. Well, City of Boise is doing this, and apparently it violates the new law for the state of Idaho. Apparently Boise thinks it's not constrained by those laws. The City of Boise announced last Thursday night that they were going to have a statement on it to explain what they were doing. Well, they didn't. A spokesperson had told KIVI, that's one of the TV stations there, that it intends to keep on flying existing flags on city property. The Idaho Statesman reported that the flag was down for a time on Thursday morning. Now, why is all this important? I think it's important because if you're elected to public office, doesn't matter if it's statewide office or a city office or a county office, you are there to represent all of the people who live in that area. If you're elected as governor of Idaho, like Brad Little, then you're representing everybody in the state of Idaho. If you're elected to the city council in Boise, you're representing everybody in that city. You don't get to use your city position or county position or state position as a private political soapbox, because that's what we're allowing people to do. When a county commissioner says, well, I believe in the rainbow flag. Well, good for you. You can fly it at your own house all you want. What you can't do is put it up over a government agency that represents people who agree with the flag and those who disagree with the flag. The Idaho Statesman said that when you looked at pictures of the flag's colors now appear more brilliant or vibrant, and a small hole in the flag is no longer there. They were asked whether or not they put up a new flag. A spokesperson refused to respond to that. Well, here's the question. If the state of Idaho passes a law and says, you can't do this, you can't use this as a political soapbox. And it's the same kind of message that an awful lot of school districts have tried to send, to say to teachers, the fact that you have a captive group or a captive audience in your students sitting in your classroom does not mean that you get to bring your personal agenda. And if you say, well, Lars, would you say that if they put up a flag you agreed with? I would say the same thing. As a teacher, it's not your personal political agenda that comes into the classroom. It is the agenda of educating the kids, the things that their parents have paid for, the things that their parents are willing to support. And we don't run these private political agendas. The flag legislation defined what flags could be flown by the state of Idaho or any county, municipality, special district, or other political subdivision. It lists the United States flag, the official flag of the government entity, say a school district or a county or city, and official flags of any other state, flags for the military branches, and the POW/MIA flag, flags of Indian tribes, flags of other countries for special occasions, say you're welcoming a guest from outside the country, and flags of Idaho colleges, universities, and public schools. And I know that some of you are asking yourself, why is this important? Why do you care about this? Because government is there to represent the people in that jurisdiction. If you're in the United States, it's the United States flag. If you're in the state of Washington or state of Oregon or state of Idaho, it is in that state. If you're in a particular county or city, it is there. And we all know that there is a lot of disagreement about which public policies should be pushed forward and which public policies should be actually outlawed. For example, one of the biggest issues for the LGBTQ plus, all the rest of that nonsense, they want to push some so-called gender affirmation. They want to push mutilating surgery for teenagers. That is not something that everybody in any given jurisdiction agrees with. Some people agree with it. Some people disagree with it. It may be that you want to fly the rainbow flag or you want to fly some other kind of environmentalist message. You don't do that unless you get an exemption from this. I think it's perfectly sensible for the state of Idaho to have done this. I wish the state of Oregon would do it. I wish my home state, the state of Washington, would do it as well. They're not at this point. Glad to be with you. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's a pleasure to be with you. I want to get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment. And you're welcome to join the program at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we always put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you have just a moment, I'd like to have you vote in our X poll. We put up a brand new poll question every day. Today's seems very simple and very common sense. Should IRS employees who don't pay their delinquent taxes get pink slips? Right now, GOP Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa is saying she's got a bill introduced that says IRS workers now owe the government about $46 million in back taxes. And she'd like to have the tax agents of the IRS actually take a look once a year. And if you're not paid up on your taxes and you work at the IRS collecting taxes from others, then you get a pink slip and we find somebody else to do your job who's not a tax deadbeat. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. It's always brought to you by, well, Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, on the phone with me, and it's a real pleasure to welcome the new chair of the Oregon GOP, because we end up talking to the Oregon Republican Party relatively rarely, and that's not by our choice. Connie Welchel joins me now. Connie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lars. Thank you for having me.
What can we get done with the Republican Party to get some actual changes that benefit the citizens? I know they're in the minority in both houses of the legislature. I know you don't have a single statewide elected office. But there has to be something we can do, because so many things in the state of Oregon have gone very seriously wrong and continue to go wrong. So what can the GOP do?
People need to get involved. People need to get engaged. And I think it's interesting, because a lot of people who are not very politically engaged might look at the state political parties, such as the Oregon Republican Party, such as I used to look at it, as some organization separate from the people, which is the furthest thing from the truth. We are a volunteer organization. None of us get paid for anything, and everything starts at the grassroots at the county level. I got involved in politics in 2021. I was not involved before then. I got involved in response to the COVID tyranny happening in Oregon. I became a precinct committee person in my county party, and all counties in Oregon have an organized Republican county party, except for two counties, which I believe are Gilliam and Wasco. So that's where it starts. I then got involved. I helped with GOTV. And then later on, I was elected as a vice chair of the Deschutes Republicans in November of 22. Fast forward, I got vice chair in February. I say all this because, again, I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I work full time. I'm a business professional in the insurance industry. And I'm an everyday person. And when people ask me, or they get upset, like, what's going on in Oregon, and why is the Republican Party not doing more? What are you doing? Because you're the Republican Party too. So we have a ton of work that needs to be done here, and we need a lot of people. We have over 700,000 registered Republicans in Oregon, and I'm wondering, where are all of you? I hear all of your sentiment. I hear that you're frustrated. I'm frustrated with you. where are you? Please take that passion and translate it to action.
Yeah, because I pointed out, and it's my favorite example, the closest the Republicans have come to electing a GOP governor is just 22,000 votes out of over about 1.5 million votes cast. And you say, well, that's a hair's breadth of difference. Yep. And could you make it up? Yeah, you could. I suspect that the vote by mail system is used by the Democrats to cheat, and I don't see any evidence to the contrary. And now we know we've got foreign nationals that are registered as voters, and some of them are actually voting. But even still, the Republicans have come very close. And on issues, when issues are put to a vote, Oregonians generally vote conservative. I could cite a dozen of those where the vote is, you know, do you want driver's licenses for illegals? No. By a huge majority. Do you want gay marriage? No, by a large majority. I mean, there are lots of examples of that. And yet somehow when it gets right down to it, I'm not sure the legislature and the Republicans of the legislature are willing to go to the mat to defend rights. And for example, right now the legislature is about to pass a law that's basically Measure 114, you know, the gun restrictions, and I wonder how far they'll go to stop that piece of legislation.
Yes, and so this, to go back to what you're talking about, concerns with the elections here in Oregon, yes, I agree. I think we do need to focus on election security and election transparency in Oregon, and what I don't think many people understand is we are number 48 compared to the rest of the states in this country when it comes to election security based on how our current laws and statutes are written when it comes to voting in Oregon. We have many vulnerabilities in our laws, and they need to be shored up. Any successful business will do risk analyses to see where there might be gaps and vulnerabilities. And successful businesses will conduct risk mitigation techniques to shore up those gaps.
Yep.
Why we don't employ that same common sense approach to our sacred votes is beyond me. And as far as Measure 114 and all of that, so honestly, I do not consider myself a politician. I have a background with projects, and when I first got involved with the Republican Party, I love being able to bring people together to achieve great things. That's what I love doing. That's what lights me up. I saw that there's an opportunity for me to help do that in the Republican Party. I work full time, so my scope is very narrow.
Yep.
When I got involved, I realized in the COVID tyranny that we needed to get Republicans elected. So that's my scope. I'm here to get Republicans elected and to grow the party so we are more effective at getting conservatives elected as well.
Let me tell you where I think the problem is. If people say, why should I vote for a Republican? And you could say, well, you had a ballot measure that passed just barely in 114, for example, and then it went to the courts and it was quickly declared unconstitutional. But now it's in the middle of a long process that's likely to last well into next year at the Oregon Supreme Court. And it may win or lose at the Supreme Court. But in the meantime, the legislature is about to pass a law, which means that everybody's spending money to contest Measure 114. You'd be throwing your money down a rat hole to take that one to the Supreme Court, because you'll be contesting something that's no longer the law. And they'll say, but the new one that the legislature passed is a carbon copy. It is, but now you get to start the process all over again, raise more millions of dollars to contest it. So they figured out a way to completely torpedo the public's input. You voted on Measure 114. It barely passed. It was unconstitutional. Now it's being contested. But that contest goes away if the legislature passes the new law, and now you can start all over with the lawsuits.
Yeah, it's egregious if they're not listening to the people either or the Constitution. It's awful. I feel the Democrat Party has gone so far left. And honestly, I would not be in this position. I would not be here today if I was in a red state. I'm only here because Oregon has got so bad, so extreme, so extreme.
Absolutely right. That's Connie Wolchel, who is the new chair of the Oregon GOP. The GOP has not talked to me in literally years, and I'm glad that we're talking again. I don't know why they weren't talking. I think they want to get the word out. She does, and I'm glad to see that happen. It bodes well for the process in the Northwest. Back in a moment, and we'll talk about Nevada. You've got the Lars. Hey, for me.
adjust your volume. He's just that loud. Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I want to talk about elections, and I know we talk about that a lot, but I think it's better to talk about it now than, say, on the cusp of next year's midterm elections or the presidential elections about 3.5 years from now. And what's going on in one particular state, the state of Nevada, where the Secretary of State is actually actively working not to clean up the voter rolls. Now, you won't have to work very hard to guess that he is a Democrat, but let me get to that in just a moment. First, welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk Radio. And if you want to join the conversation, you're always welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the list at 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And vote in our X poll if you have a moment. I think this one's very simple. Should IRS employees who don't pay their delinquent IRS taxes, should they get pink slips? I would answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. And if you wonder, well, how in the world does somebody who works at the IRS, how do they end up with delinquent taxes where they're not paid up? Well, the number is huge. It is apparently $46 million that is owed just by the thousands of employees at the IRS. And apparently some of them have owed that money for a good long time. So imagine this, you work at the agency that's in charge of collecting taxes, sometimes at the point of a gun, from American citizens, and you're delinquent on your own taxes, but you're working in the agency that goes out and enforces the law. And I know somebody's going to say, what do you mean at the point of a gun? I mean this. If you decide not to pay your income taxes, the IRS has lots of ways to come out and put the squeeze on you. They can freeze your bank account. They can garnish wages out of your paycheck. They can, at some point, they will send law enforcement, and they will, at some point, if you have said, I'm not going to file my taxes, I'm not going to file the forms, ask Wesley Snipes, the actor, whether or not there's a law against not filing your taxes. Yeah, it's illegal to fail to file your taxes, and there are people who go to prison for that. Not members of the Biden crime family for sure, but almost everybody else who says, I'm not going to pay my taxes, I'm not going to file my taxes, there is punishment available. Well, now Senator Joni Ernst from Iowa has proposed a bill called the Audit the IRS Act that says you either get caught up on your debts to Uncle Sam, or if you work at the IRS, you will get a pink slip. And she wants the IRS to look at its entire list of employees every year, and anybody who's behind and has not paid up their full IRS taxes, they get invited to go find a job somewhere else. You can find the X-Poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Let me tell you, though, about what's going on in Nevada, because I think it's very instructive to every other state in America. They have a Secretary of State. His name is Cisco Aguilar. And apparently he's working his tail off trying to make sure that Nevada does not take its exceptionally dirty voter rolls and clean them up. So he proposed a bill, Assembly Bill 534. And what does that do? Well, let me explain, because Pigpen Project, which is one of the groups out there in Nevada that is chased after these issues, they point out Section 535 and Section 547. That sounds complicated. It's not. Consider this. The United States Postal Service, which is a government agency, not a private company, they have something called the National Change of Address Database. So if you call the Postal Service and say, hey, I'm going to be out of town for a couple of weeks, hold my mail. They know that you have not moved. You're just asking them to hold your mail, your mail, for a period of time. But if you make a permanent change of address, they record that in the NCOA. It's the National Change of Address Database. Now, if you find out that a voter who is registered at a particular address has permanently moved from that address to another address, can you imagine how valuable that would be if, say, the state of Nevada or any state in America said, let's take that permanent change of address and we can tell the voter, you've now moved from your old address, your voter registration is no longer valid. You have to re-register at the new address. Not a complicated matter. Except that Aguilar has said that information like the National Change of Address that is gleaned from that government database does not equate to what he calls personal knowledge. And what's happened is he claims that challenges like the ones filed by Pigpen Project lacked personal knowledge that the voter has moved. Hold on a second. You have a government agency called the U.S. Postal Service. They record where your mail is going. That's how your mail gets to your house. When you notify the Postal Service that you have permanently moved, not put your mail on hold, but permanently moved to another address, that's not enough information to indicate that you know that person no longer lives at the old address. So here's what happens. If Pigpen Project, and this is written by Chuck Muth, who's with the Citizen Outreach Foundation, if you went to the suspected voter's address and said, has he actually moved? And the current residence confirms that the voter has moved and does not live there anymore, that would not be enough for the Secretary of State of the state of Nevada to know that the voter has moved. They don't want to take bad registrations off the rolls. And I think there's a reason that Democrats do not want to take bad voter information off the rolls, because it would limit the ability to cheat. So Aguilar has included in this new bill that he's pushing at the Nevada legislature, and I would imagine there are similar efforts in other states. They want brand new language that says you must have personal knowledge that the person has moved. Now, obviously, if you're the person, you could go down and say, I have now moved. I want to change my voter registration. Other than that, he says, unless a particular state official has personal knowledge that the voter has moved, not something listed by the personal, U.S. Postal Service as a permanent change of address, that's not good enough. You've got to have personal knowledge. Call up the guy's brother-in-law. Has he actually moved? Well, I don't know. They said the term does not include knowledge obtained from a third party, including information obtained from the databases at U.S. Postal Service. Now, as Chuck Muth writes, common sense says that if the current resident says the voter no longer lives there, that should be enough to trigger the issuance by elections officials of a postcard. Now, that's actually in Nevada's required by state law to the moved voter requesting confirmation that he still lives where he's registered. If the voter does not confirm he lives there within 30 days, then the voter is shifted from active to inactive status, meaning he won't get a ballot in the mail. You say, well, then that voter will be disenfranchised. They'll be denied their right to vote. No, they've told the Postal Service they don't live at the address. They've been sent a postcard and failed to reply back and say, no, I actually still live here. This is still my address. And should they be mailed a ballot? By law, county clerks may, but are not required to, use the Postal Service database to clean up their dirty voter rolls. In other words, the government officials are allowed to use the same database to figure out whether or not voters have moved, but the public is not allowed to use that. And as he says, if county clerks were doing so, it wouldn't be a big deal. But a lot of Democrats in liberal states have said, we do not want to change the way we're doing this. We have lots and lots of voters who are registered to vote, and we don't have any idea that they've moved. So therefore, we're not going to change their registration. We'll just send a ballot to an address where they no longer live. And who knows who is going to mark that ballot and send it back in. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest
Network. The Lars Larson Show. When he talks, you have no choice but to listen. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Always glad to get to your calls. And let me do that in just a moment. First, I want to talk to Daniel Cochran, who's a senior research associate with the Tech Policy Center at Heritage. Daniel, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Tell me what I always want to call it Facebook, so we'll just call it Facebook instead of Meta. But what are they doing with WhatsApp and Instagram?
Yeah, so there was a crucial trial that kicked off just today here in D.C., and that trial has to do with whether or not Meta, which is the Facebook renamed, it's a parent company of the Facebook platform, Instagram, and WhatsApp, whether Meta engaged in anti-competitive practices when it bought Instagram back in That was several years ago in 2012. And the question, this case started under the first Trump administration, so it's been many years in the making. But the real pivotal question is, can we hold big tech companies like Meta accountable for the monopoly power they use to not only censor conservatives, but harm our children? So this trial is going to last, I believe, around 8 weeks. We're expecting to see a testimony from several key executives, including probably Mark Zuckerberg. They plan, the government, the Trump administration, specifically the Federal Trade Commission, plans to put him on the stand. And we'll see probably several both current and former executives from Instagram. So this is going to be a blockbuster trial, and it will have huge consequences for the makeup of the current internet.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm not a lawyer, but Daniel, how could it not be sort of a monopolistic move to say, we can't compete with you, so we'll just buy you and make you part of the big hive mind over in Meta?
Well, that's exactly the challenge that Meta faces, because as you just mentioned, back in an email in 2008, Mark Zuckerberg said exactly that essentially they spent $1 billion buying Instagram in order to prevent that then startup from competing against them. So they have a sort of an uphill battle. These tech companies, though, are crafty. They have a lot of money, and they tend to, you know, they'll pay for lots of high-priced lawyers and economists to come in and tell the court that this is in the interest of consumers. But we know that just the opposite is true. Instagram in particular, under Mark Zuckerberg's management, has been a serial abuser of children. Arturo Bahar, who is one of their whistleblowers that came out just last year, he was talking about how Instagram was enabling child sex predators to access and exploit children on the platform, specifically through its messaging and friend recommendation algorithms. And even after he brought that to Mark Zuckerberg and Instagram's leadership, the company did nothing about it because it would have undermined their bottom line. So at the end of the day, these companies care about two things: money and power. And if you ask them if you're depending on them to do anything that compromises that, we pretty much know how Facebook is going to respond. It's that they're going to choose the power and the money over our children.
Well, and I guess what I wonder about in that regard, Daniel, is this. Are they telling us they have so many perverts in their, audience, that if they use the AI to instead filter those out and not give them the kind of connections with children, that would undermine them financially? I mean, do they really have that many perverts in their audience?
Well, you know, just a couple days ago, there was a Facebook whistleblower, Sarah Wynn Williams, who testified before a subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she said something really stunning. We've known it for years, but she sort of confirmed it in her testimony, that Facebook and Facebook meaning Meta and Instagram, they're able to exploit our deepest emotional vulnerabilities, and they're specifically doing that for children and expectant mothers. She testified in particular that because of all the data that these companies are collecting, they can pinpoint when a teen feels depressed. And at that moment, they're able to target ads for that teen. So your teen, when they're depressed, they are valuable to Facebook. They are valuable to Meta. And that's the kind of exploitation that you can expect from a monopoly. And that's why we want to break them up and rein in their power. That's what's happening, is it's really rending our social fabric.
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering. If they know that much about people to the point where they can tell what kind of mood the person is in, it would be that difficult to have an algorithm look at particular users and say, this is a groomer who wants to get in touch with kids. We're going to carefully steer him the other direction. And if he insists or persists, then we're just going to take him off altogether. There can't be that many perverts out there, can there? Because if they can tell all that, they know a certain amount about your background, because when you log on and create an account, they've got some access to data. And then they're able to observe your interactions with other people and the kinds of sites that you go to. Doesn't that give them enough to be able to exclude the really bad actors from any kind of contact with children? I would think you'd be able to do that.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Arturo Bahar, who was a contractor on Instagram, the whistleblower I mentioned, or one of the two whistleblowers I already mentioned, he went to Facebook with solutions. He made specific recommendations on how the company could change its algorithms, specifically in its settings, privacy settings for children, to remedy some of these harms. They refused because it goes against their bottom line. They want more children, Daniel, in general, on their platform.
How much could it, I'm sorry to interrupt, but how much could it go against her bottom line, unless you assume that of the millions and millions of people using this, a substantial percentage of them are out there trying to groom children? Is that the case? Because otherwise, you'd think they'd be like, say, a public park or a theme park that says, hey, there's certain people on our 86 list. This guy comes to the gate. Don't let him in. We know that he's wrong in one way or another. These people, let them in. I mean, almost there are lots of businesses that do that. I mean, at the building where our main studios are located, the front desk has a book full of pictures of people who've been permanently 86 from the building. Why? Because they come in and do damage or they threaten people and things like that. Fine, these people are out. But that's not the majority of people, unless they're telling us we have so many of these freaks in our audience that if we had to exclude some of the freaks, we'd lose big money. Well, that's suggesting that an awful lot of the Instagram, population is freaky people after kids. Or am I wrong about that?
Here's one of the realities is that one of the things you'd have to do to combat this, and we've been a big advocate here at Heritage for parental controls and age verification for social media.
Yep.
And so that would mean that, look, if you're under a certain age, you shouldn't be on the platform at all. But guess what? Does Facebook or Instagram want that? No. Why? Because it would reduce the number of users on their platforms. Remember, the more users, the more eyeballs, the more time spent equals more money. And every time they create, you're right, they have this information on all of these users, and they could take steps to mitigate these harms. But why do they not want to do that? Because every small tweak, remember, you're talking about, in the case of Instagram, I believe over hundreds of millions of users at the very least, every small tweak they make creates friction, meaning it creates one small difference that could marginally reduce behavior or use of the platform. And that could, for them, that's dollars and cents. They don't want to create any barrier to making any money. So every last dime, they're going to optimize their platform to get it. That's the reality. And I mean, just to bring up something you mentioned, but last year when the Senate Judiciary Committee had Mark Zuckerberg before them, Senator Cruz actually asked him this very similar question to what you asked me, which is he brought up an example where someone on Instagram was trying to access sexually explicit material, specifically CSAM. The platform knew it, and it actually showed a notice saying, are you sure you want to access this information? And Senator Cruz's question to Mark Zuckerberg is, given that you knew that this person was trying to access this illegal content, again, we're talking about child porn, why was your platform even providing any access to that?
Unbelievable. Daniel, thank you very much. Are you feeling?
The Zoom meeting you actually want to be at. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get you your phone calls and your emails. This segment of the show is always brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists, Oregon Medical Centers. And our X poll today, an easy question. Should IRS employees who have not paid their delinquent taxes get pink slips? In other words, should they be fired? My answer to that would be yes. Joni Ernst is pushing a bill in the U.S. Senate that $46 million is owed in back taxes by IRS workers who are themselves out trying to squeeze American citizens to pay their taxes, and yet the IRS workers have not paid their taxes. She wants to see them fired if they don't bring their taxes up to date every single year. You can find the X-Poll question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. I'm kind of curious about this naysayer. John is calling in. John, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree? And thanks for calling, by the way. But well, what do we disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, it sounded like he didn't think there are that many predatory people going on things like Instagram, and I say there is. There's two types of things that I could see appearing on there. One is people pushing, gender-affirming care, and then there's natural pedophiles that are grooming. Let me ask you this question.
Well, just so my position on it's clear, John. What I was saying to him is if Zuckerberg shows up in front of Congress and says we can't screen these people because if we do, we're going to lose a lot of money. Well, are they saying that 10% or 20% or 50% of their current clients on Instagram are perverts? Because if that's the case, maybe the whole thing should be shut down. I just thought out of 100 million people, do we have 95 million perverts?
Well, let me look at, you know, technically, wouldn't you say every school librarian that puts disgusting content in front of children could be considered a pervert?
No, and I'll tell you why broadening the definition that way is a bad idea. Do I think it's right that librarians do that? No. Do I think that that librarian is harming kids by putting that on the shelves? I would answer yes. Are they committing a sexual crime against the child? I'd say no. But if these freaks who are on Instagram are searching out child pornography, that's illegal. It's very clear that it's illegal. And if Instagram or Facebook helps facilitate their access to it, then somebody should get fired and somebody should go to jail.
Listen, let me ask you this question. If I were showing the same kind of content to kids on a street corner that the librarians put on the shelf, do you think I should be considered a sexual pervert?
I think you would. Yes. I think you'd be the crime is contributing to the sexual delinquency of a minor. But that's where you're going out and saying, I'm going to find this kid and I'm going to show him this kid all these dirty pictures or whatever it is you're intent to do. In the case of the librarian, where the librarian says, I'm going to put this book on the shelf. It's there. It's available. But they're not out trying to sell it to the to say to the kid, hey, go read this book.
Are you so sure? You know, I think there's a lot of pedophiles hiding in the. As teachers school librarians.
But we've kind of gone far astray from this. The question is, if Facebook is operating Instagram, and if Instagram has a given client base, I forget what their current number is, maybe it's 100 million people. If they're telling us they can't operate financially as a business unless they allow all the perverts to get all the access they want to everything and not filter them out, they're admitting that a huge number, maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 20%. But you would think as a business, you'd want to get those freaks out of the way. You'd want to say, we don't really want you on Instagram. If you're asking where to find child porn, we want to discourage you from using our product at all. In the same way that if a bar wants to sell alcohol to adults, that's a legitimate business. If they find out that one of the adults is obnoxious, he could be sexually obnoxious, he could be physically obnoxious, that he comes in and harasses the clientele. You don't want that person in your business, do you?
I don't think they should, but, well, you know, sometimes the dollars speak louder than common sense.
I guess that's possibly the case. But, John, I always appreciate a good naysayer. Should IRS employees who don't pay their delinquent back taxes get a pink slip? So far, I haven't had a naysayer on that, and that's interesting because I would imagine that most Americans who've ever had any kind of dealings with the IRS would probably say, well, at the very least, the people who are involved in the IRS, working at the IRS and compelling the payment of taxes by American citizens, they definitely ought to be up to date on their taxes. And if they aren't getting up to date, they got a problem. Now, let me mention one last thing this hour, and that is the Washington State Senate has now voted to set a 10% limit on annual rent increases. So this is the state of Washington telling landlords, we don't want you to be able to raise the rents by very much, even when your costs are going up. Now, if you tell the landlord, you can't recover the cost. So when your property taxes go up, your utility bills go up, your maintenance costs go up, some of it driven by state action. When the state raises the minimum wage, and then that means the apartment operator has to pay more money to get maintenance and other work done. And then you tell these people, you're required to do all those things for your tenants, but you're not allowed to recover the cost of all those operations costs. At that point, you're making it financially impossible to run rental housing in the state of Washington. If you do that, you will get less housing and rents will go up even more. So once again, the Democrats are their own worst enemies, and they're always the enemies of sensible people. It is the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.